Hello and welcome back to Your Favorite Album, the podcast where we sit down with someone and ask them, hey, what's your favorite album? I'm your host, Adam Santiago, and joining me this week is the man behind Washed Up Emo, Tom Mullen.
How are you?
I'm pretty good, Tom. How about yourself?
I am all right. I am a little under the weather, but it makes sense, I guess. Talking about my favorite record, it's probably going to be depressing. It's probably going to be sad. So
I like it. I like it. Before we get into that, you mind explaining Washed Up Emo to the people listening?
Yes. So about 7 or 8 years ago, I got really frustrated with sort of what was happening with the punk scene and Warped Tour and those kinds of things. And there were all these great bands from the late 90s and early 2000s, and no one's really talking about them. And no one was really, you know, mentioning, you know, Elliot or talking about Sunny Day Real Estate or Mineral. And what was really great is it started angry. It started where I was a little bit aggressive, and I was just very angry at sort of the mid-2000s. And it slowly turned, probably after a couple years, maybe three, a site where it was sort of, I was talking about old bands and I didn't really know where I was going to go with it. And then in 2010, someone wrote me and said, hey, by the way, just so you know, there's these bands in Russia and they're kind of doing this new emo thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? People care? People about it? And so I started doing more research and reaching out, going to Last FM, and started seeing, like, wow, these bands really are. Like, I thought it was forgotten. I literally thought someone put it in a box and put it away. And to have someone tell me that was kind of very, very, emotional for me, because I didn't think anyone else cared. So slowly I started hearing about labels, and I started hearing about other bands. And the site sort of turned into now talking about the newer bands, and the DJ night started with a couple friends, and we've been doing that for over 3 years in New York City. We have one night a month, first Thursday, where we either play records ourselves, we have guest DJs come from bands or other, if it's a label or things, and sometimes we've had after parties for Texas the Reason or Braid. If the show happens to line up on the first Thursday, they invite everybody to come out and hang out with us, and they usually DJ or they let us, and the show goes really, really late. And the other thing that we've done, or that I've done, is the podcast, and that's where we started with Chuck from Deep Elm Records. And we've interviewed bands from all over the genres. And we pretty much, throughout the last few years, we've interviewed the who's who. From The Promise Ring to The Get Up Kids, Braid, Mineral, you name it, we've had them. And so it's been a great way to sort of hear their stories audio-wise, because there wasn't an outlet for them.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Long story short, Washed Up Emo is the home for old emo bands to be remembered and new bands to be discovered. And it's been a great, amazing thing that I've met so many people out of that I never thought I would. And, you know, hearing that Jim Atkins said, I've listened to it, or, you know, other bands mentioned that they've talked about it, is very, 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 very exciting.
Yeah, I looked at the list of guests and, oh man, that's awesome. Like, I still need to dive into all of them, but I'm just like, holy crap, it's everyone I want to sit down and talk with.
Yeah, I've been very, very, very lucky to have either a friend vouch for me, you know, before, or another artist already know about it. So when I do reach out, they're aware. It's been very, very, very exciting, I'm coming from a place where I want to help. I want to help them, and I'm coming from the right place. And I think artists are at the point where they're okay with that. They're okay with talking about it.
I hear you. So now I'm going to pose to you the question I pose to every single guest on this show. What's your favorite album, Tom?
That was a very hard question. And it kind of ties into your last question a little bit. There is an elusive artist that I've wanted for the podcast, and I haven't been able to connect. I know that they're aware. I know that they just haven't found the right time. But throughout, for that question, and this plays into the last part I just mentioned, plays into that, is that there's a lot of records that, you know, I love, and a lot of records you've probably featured. Are there records that I can play front to back whenever they come on? I can listen to it straight through. That's the kind of the record for me. And there's a lot of records that are number one for me. And I was had a lot of thought about it. And the record that is probably my favorite record is Sunny Day Real Estate's How It Feels to Be Something On.
Nice.
Released in 1998. That is my number one. And it's also the person that, you know, or artist that has been elusive from the podcast. So I'm dying to, you know, interview them and find out more about this record. I have some interesting stories, obviously, about them and, you know, being able to see them and Jeremy by himself, but still have not yet had them on, which would be, I think I could do a mic drop after that. I think I could finish the podcast.
Well, see, now here's where this might be giving you a lot of fuel to talk, is that this surprises many people, but I never got into Sunny D Real Estate. Not that I disliked them. I just never, just like same with Pavement, like I'd be at bars and I'd hear a song and I'm like, I like this song. Why do I know it? And someone would go, oh, Sunny Day Real Estate. And I'm like, that happened so many times, but I never jumped out and grabbed some stuff. So when you told me you were going to go with this album, I've been listening to it for the past few days, and I'm like, shit, where have I been?
This record in particular was a pretty interesting time. Not only, you know, Nate, or excuse me, Dan... Oh, was it Dan? No, it was Nate. Now I'm forgetting, and we should fact check, or if I'm wrong, I apologize. But this tour, Nate Mendel wasn't in there. It was Dan, Will, and Jeremy, and then this other bass player. And, you know, it was a departure from the four original members. And I remember, you know, seeing the tour in college, being very excited because, you know, obviously you wanted to hear, you know, In Circles, or you wanted to hear, you know, stuff off the Pink record. And it was proggy, but the songs were so well put together. And I just remember that show being very, very enjoyable. I remember I was looking at some photos actually of it to kind of jog some memories of that specific show. I took them with my crappy camera. And I had to wait. It was like the old school Instagram. So I had to wait, you know, for the photos and just to, you know, from Jeremy asking everyone not to smoke, and I went to school in North Carolina, so it was Tobacco Road, so, you know, for people not to smoke. You know, they ended the set in such a beautiful way with Days Were Golden, and which is the last song on the record, and they kind of all sort of stopped playing, leaving, you know, Will the drummer to, like, finish the set with just the drum beat. Just some of those very, very emotional things, obviously, but from a band that was so good. And I think people mention the first two records for Sunny Day, and everyone loves the self-titled and with the little toys on the front. But How It Feels is, I will listen to this one more than any other Sunny Day record.
Now, was it like that from the start, or was it one of those that, you know, because sometimes when you've established a love for a band, you know, it takes a while for a newer album to grow on you if it's a slightly, like, different take on things.
I definitely liked the first two records before this one. Like, I liked it. I mean, there was some great songs, Guitar of the, you know, Video Games, Pillars, you know, Two Promises, like those all great songs. But yeah, you're right, it was later. It was, I believe, after I left college. I liked the record, I loved them. It wasn't like I didn't like it, but it didn't hit me where I was listening to it the whole way through and not skipping a song. And it just had such a flow to it. I think the other ones, there's amazing songs on it, but it's, this one is to me set apart because all the songs sort of go together, and there's like a theme to them, in my head anyway, when I listen to it.
I see. So trying to think of, in terms of everything you do, like where does this fall? Like, trying to think how this relates to the whole emo thing. Just like, how would you connect it to it?
How did it connect to me so strongly?
Yeah.
I mean, Jeremy's always been an amazing vocalist, and from seeing them on, you know, if it was 120 minutes or seeing their videos or getting to see them live, which I've had the pleasure of doing himself solo and with Sunny Day in a couple different areas and times, there's something about him that I think they're still scared to sort of be associated with. I think they're not happy with being associated, but they really write beautiful, beautiful music that is that connects to me, and I know a lot of people, really emotionally. If it's the song structure, if it's his vocal lines, if it's how the guitars are laid out, the loud soft, which I think was obviously huge, you know, with Nirvana and a bunch of bands before them, that very dynamic, I think, was hitting a lot of people. And yes, they get thrown into that realm whenever there's an emo article, whenever Noisy or AV Club wants to mention the Revival or mention emo bands, they're going to mention them. And I think that's a testament to their songs and their volume of records and what they put out, and Jeremy's solo stuff, Jeremy Enig's. But there was something about this one, Something How It Feels, that it, for some reason, it hit me that there was something so much more to this record. It just, maybe it was, we didn't think we were going to ever see them again. And they got back together and did it. Maybe it was that moment. Maybe it was their, you know, it was volatile. You never knew if you were going to, you know, okay, they played, but you're never going to see them again. And that's testament. They've kind of come and gone as they please. So yeah, it was, and I think, yeah, it just seems like they were okay with that place at the time. They were okay with what they put out.
Doing things on their own terms.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like a, oh crap, we have to do this, or it was we put out a record and toured. It wasn't sort of the first few where it was they were there and touring, but it just seemed, you know, that they were ready to break. And this record and this tour wasn't like that.
I gotcha. Now, is this like I would imagine you get like asked to like turn people on to new music a lot, given, you know, everything you do with the website and anything. Is this like, do you usually go like full albums when you do recommendations, or do you go like single tracks and stuff? Like, would this be like part of a mix, or would you just throw the full album at someone?
That's a really good question. It would depend on the person and how deep I think I could go. Yes, if it was someone new, I would throw them 42, or I would throw them in circles. If it was like singles, but if I really had a longer discussion and was explaining important albums, I would send them this one and say, if you're going to listen to one thing all the way through, yes, listen to In Circles. Yes, listen to 47. If I said 42, I'm in 47. My old band used to be called Mirror 42. So I'm always accidentally saying that. So, you know, I played them those, but I said, if you're going to listen to an album and you have patience, listen to How It Feels. And the live record that came out in 99 was a ton of those songs too. So that was always a good sort of, I think I got into it a lot more too. I remember buying the VHS tape for that live record, at my local shop and paying like $18 or something absolutely ridiculous for it. And playing it 100 times. And, it was, you know, that was like a little lesson, but they played a ton of songs off that record. At that show.
You mentioned you went to college at in North Carolina.
Yes.
What school did you go to?
I went to Elon. Have you heard of that school?
No, I haven't. Because we've already had one North Carolina alumni on the show, so it's just like, you guys went to the same school.
It was a very, very interesting time, and actually this tour for this record, for How It Feels, I got to see them 3 times. And they were all within one, first two shows were 45 minutes apart, and then the last show was about an hour and 10 away. But they literally played a weekend. So I had, I think there might, it was either Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, but I got to see Sunday Day Real Estate 3 days. And one of them was, it was, where was it? Raleigh, Winston-Salem, and then Charlotte. And it was this tour. So that also was a huge impact, on me getting to see them, during that tour three times. But yeah, Elon is this little school, in North Carolina. It's now, it's actually bigger and more expensive. And, but when I went there, it was a pretty small liberal arts school where I just hung out at the radio station, got free records, and, was, had a couple radio shows. And that's what I, that's how I sort of learned the music industry, when I was in school.
Hey, sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it was all right. Free shows and free music, and it was like 3 to 4 nights a week. I was not that bummed out. And gas was less than $1 a gallon.
Yeah.
So, sorry, kids. Grandpa's talking.
Exactly. And you got to see one of your favorite bands three times in a row, which is sweet.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. You know, you see the tour routing, and a lot of times we'd get jumped over, and it would be, you know, Virginia, and then Atlanta, and you're just like, damn it. But soon there were some great people at Cat's Cradle, great people at the Ritz in Raleigh, and an amazing booker at Tremont Music Hall in Charlotte, and the show started coming, and it was 3 to 4 nights a week. And there's a funny story that I tell, that in college, I forget what year it was, but one year my parents were sort of thinking that I was spending too much time at shows and spending too much time doing that. And I said, I got a trade or a bet. I bet that I'll go to as many shows as I can. This is for a semester. And I said, I'll go to as many shows as I can, and I'll get the best grades I've ever gotten. And they're like, if I do, you're going to leave me alone. And so they're like, okay, deal. And so I went to 3 to 4 shows a week. And this isn't like your local band in the local town of your buddy playing acoustic songs. This is like going to see a punk show, going to see, you know, if it's Hot Water Music, if it's Mr. T Experience, MXPX, a metal show. I was a metal director, so I got into, you know, all the metal shows. I was going to, you know, actual shows. Did that for a semester, got president's list. Which I wasn't taking fluff classes either, so my parents left me alone. And it was two things: one, I got to see amazing music, and two, I kind of felt I could do the music industry because I could be out all night, show up at a 9 a.m. class or a 10 a.m. class and be fine and function. And it wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't the big thing to me. So it was funny. I was like, all right, I can do this.
I found my calling card.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, you said, like, with these guys, you're trying to get them on the show and everything. Have you interacted with any of them at all?
Yes, that actually comes into part of the other story I wanted to say. So first half is I've interviewed Sunday's Best, and I interviewed Pedro, and we actually haven't released this episode. This was a couple years ago, because we literally talked for 3 hours and talked shit on so many things. It's ever going to hear it, but it was absolutely hilarious. I was crying through it, laughing. Not crying, crying, laughing. And when I was talking to him, he had mentioned that he knows Jeremy. And so Pedro reached out, and I think Jeremy was a little apprehensive about it, and it just wasn't, you know, time. Fast forward a couple years, I was in New York, and Sunday Day was doing that reunion tour, and they were playing Terminal 5, which is a huge, huge venue for New York City. It fits like 3,500 people, could be more.
Yeah.
Big venue.
Not my favorite venue.
Yeah, it's not mine either, and I'm it's one of those things where they band better be damn good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Show up. So the, you know, were you at that show?
No, I wasn't actually.
So I buy a ticket. Sometimes I'm, you know, I'll rely on the label or I'll reach out. This time I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy a ticket. I don't want to deal with any, you know, dealing with Sub Pop or dealing with anyone trying to get in. So I don't have anybody to bring. And I had a really good friend that wrote me and said, like, I'll go with you. I was like, oh, great. Well, let's go together. So we meet up, and she's like, hold on, I need to get my ticket. And I was like, all right. So she's in Will Call. and she hands me an all access pass. I was like, what is this? And she said, oh, I'm friends with the drummer. And I was like, you could have told me that, you know, like I did not have no idea, you know, that you're friends with Will. So anyway, I got my ticket. I got to go to, you know, the little section in Terminal 5 where you can stand on the side. And I, it was, you know, they played a lot of songs off this record too, which was great, which I loved because I was obviously my favorite record, so I wanted to hear those songs, and they were playing all the old hits. So then after we're hanging out, she brings me backstage. I meet all of them. So I meet Jeremy, I meet Dan, I meet Will and Nate, and we all end up going to this bar. And we walk out there, and I ended up talking to Dan a bunch about Washed Up Emo, talking to him about what I do. And it was really early on about the, you know, the site. It wasn't as, you know, not, I'm not going to say polished, but at least it wasn't what it was. And so we start talking, and he was really into it and was like, loved what I was doing and talking about the old band. And it was just one of those surreal nights where I'm like, did I just hang out with Sunny Day Real Estate? And I'm have the mindset where I work with music every day. I work in the industry. I'm not really affected by celebrity. I'm doing a job, and that's what I'm doing. And so if it's I'm meeting an artist or something like that, it doesn't faze me as much. But this, I was like blown away. And I ended up staying up all night that night, probably till like 2 or 3 in the morning, writing a blog post about it. I wake up the next morning, and a few hours in, someone writes me and says, I think Brooklyn Vegan took your review and like credited you and wrote, like took your review as the review of the show. And come to find out, I click on it, the guy had copied a bunch of stuff that I had written, like quoted me, wasn't copied, but, you know, quoted Washed Up Emo. And there's a bunch of videos, and you can see me like finger pointing, like in the video, on the side of the stage, like to these songs. And it was sort of a, now that I think about it, it was a big catalyst for people to know about the site. To I started getting more calls, I started getting more emails, and it was a very big sort of moment. And it came out of just me wanting to share what happened that night, and you know, it was. This is a very long story, but it was very serendipitous that I had one of those kind of nights where you go in thinking you just have a ticket, and it turns into so much more. And that was, you know, that was Sunny Day Real Estate.
A similar thing happened to Willy Wonka. He had
exactly.
a ticket, thought it was just a ticket, and he ended up with a whole damn factory.
Yeah, and to be able to write about it and not think that I'm writing this for a site, I'm just doing this out of passion, and having people respond to it and someone credit it for a big site. Brooklyn Vegan, I think, is an amazing site. It wasn't like, you know, EW picked it up, or, you know, a site that wasn't credible. Brooklyn Vegan writes about everything. They
That's
write
true,
about
yeah.
punk, they write about hip hop, and they write about emo and or indie rock, and for them to do that was like a big, like, okay, I think maybe I should do more with this or spend some more time doing X. It was a really motivating, and I'll always remember that night.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Like, just like that awesome experience leads to like good reception, and then further motivates you to keep doing what you love. Like,
yeah. And another, you know, another time I drove 5 hours throughout the night to see them in DC, and drove 5 hours back in the same night. Just one of those sort of bands that I, when they were around, or they were close, 5 hours was close, but when it was dollar gas, you really made an effort. And, I was lucky enough to see Jeremy solo, in 2007 or 2008, and another beautiful moment where he's playing a couple of these songs off How It Feels, and he had piano, so he was kind of doing different renditions. It was just they're a beautiful band, and you know, they should be mentioned in that genre, regardless of them wanting it or not. It was at I'm sorry, just some things happen, and I'd rather a band be remembered than forgotten, and they are remembered. And their music shines through. There's a reason why people are still talking about it. There's a reason why bands still mention them, is because of this amazing music that they have put together as a band. And that song that they put out with the Circus Survive as a split 7-inch, That song is amazing. If anyone's not listened to it, it's called Lipton Witch, and it's amazing. It breaks down in the first 20 seconds. I'm a huge fan of breakdowns. So it breaks down in the first 20 seconds, and just a great, great song. And I hope there's more. I hope there's more somewhere out there from this band or from them as a whole, because I think the community would welcome them with open arms again, just like they did on their reunion tour, and I think have a moment like Refuse did, where they were sort of got to go around the world and sort of get what was rightfully theirs.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I have a question, but I'm going to lead into it first with a secondary question, which is coming for... I don't know what I'm talking about, but here we go.
With this... You're awesome.
Thank you, sir. You're too kind. What's your feeling on this whole emo revival thing? Do you feel it even went anywhere, or do you just think it's just like the press coverage, like them just needing something to kind of like talk about?
I wish I could remember my notes from a couple people that I spoke to. I had a great conversation with a few writers about this, and I'm compiling that episode for a podcast. And I think, if I'm thinking off the top of my head, and I think it's a couple things. I like it. I was very surprised in that year when someone told me that there were bands that sounded like Sunny Day and Mineral and not like My Chemical Romance and Fall Out Boy. Think about it. At that time, those bands were on top of the world. They're on MTV. They're all over the world playing these huge shows. I never would have thought that it would have been remembered. The information wasn't fast moving as much. It took effort. Now, I think it's so easy to search into Wikipedia, go to Last.fm, go to Spotify. All these kind of things are there now for someone to ingest, where before, you and I, we were ordering records from a catalog and hoping that it was good. And so I think the ease of finding everything made it sort of happened. I think people looked past that. They looked past the glam of it, the hair metal phase, which is what I call it. And so getting back to your sort of question on, I love it. I think some of the bands copy the Midwest scene too much. I think people really, there are a lot of Cap'n Jazz type bands that are not good, that I think need a lot of time to figure out their sound, and it's really blatant that they're just being chaotic and goofy and off key vocals. And I hope that they move past that. And I think over the years, these bands, these second or third records for them have been awesome, and they're just getting better. So from that, it's the records are getting better, and people in our age are in a position where this is nostalgia for them. So someone sounding like that is huge for them, so they're going to write about it. Mm-hmm. I think those sort of two worlds came together, where someone was in the right position, they had a really long, strong affinity, or got the history. There's a writer at Brooklyn Vegan that he's really young, but he understands the history and understands how things connect and why this band connected to this band. Not because of genre, but just you can – from a scene, like – that when someone falls in the pit, you pick them up. Like those type of things you understand when you're talking about these records and these bands, and I think the bands do too. And not everyone listens to all the old school stuff, but they're influenced by it, or at least there's a record. So all of those things, smart writers, right time, and the bands making really good music, there's a reason why we're talking about it. If the song sucked, if Balance and Composure wrote a stiff record and no one bought it and it didn't land on the top 200, it wouldn't have landed on the top 200. Yeah. It wouldn't. Good music will rise. I always say that. I've said that. That's one of my mantras. Like, a good record will rise at one point. And it's like, American football, they're getting to do their reunion tour and people are excited. Mineral, same thing. I never thought Mineral was getting back together. Even in my podcast that I did a few years ago or a couple years ago, Chris Simpson said Gloria Record will get back together before Mineral, and now so there is a time for everybody, and it's an amazing part where if you're thinking of Top Shelf Records, they have Jazz June, they have Braid's new records coming out on Top Shelf, but then they have all these amazing bands, and they're the young and the old are playing together, and what a beautiful thing to be able to have a band that you idolize on your label or touring with you and teaching you, and these younger bands learning and respecting them. What a beautiful relationship. And I think it's a great thing. And there can be tags for everything, but good music is connected, and these things will rise. It just happens to be this moment that all this is happening, and it's totally not a bad thing, and no one should take credit either. No one should say, well, I did it, or, you know, people were saying, well, you've been writing about it forever. I'm like, well, I did, but there's been other blogs just like me, or other people and writers and bands, and it's communities, it's group, it's the Philly scene, it's the New York, New Jersey scene, it's the LA scene, or it's the OC scene. All these bands and times and periods are sort of building a community, and it's very reminiscent of the late 90s, where you rolled into Milwaukee and you knew that the Promise Ring guys were probably going to show up. You went to, if it was, you know, the Midwest, or you went out to Colorado, you know, probably going to have Christy Front Drive play with you, or they knew the booker, or they were at the show, or it was that kind of things happening. And an amazing long story, I apologize, but
no,
that is why I think in 2013, 2014, the emo revival is sort of happening, because it's coming from the right place. These bands get it. It's not, yes, at some point maybe one of these bands is going to be in a bus, but they're not out for the dress. These bands aren't coming from the Hot Topic world. They're coming from, I'm in a van, I have a friend in this other band that's in this other city, and we're going to trade shows. And it grows from there. And the reason it makes me so happy is that late 90s time was the last time that sort of, before cell phones really took control. You might have had a flip phone, you might have had the old Nokia, but a lot of people didn't. I didn't have a phone until 2000. And before that time, you drive up to the show, you find a payphone, and you call the kid that put on the show. And I'm not saying that happens now, because obviously everyone's in their phones, or they're doing things, but it's at least they're doing it in a community way, not necessarily they're seeing people face to face. And that's what you kind of had to do to make a community back then in the 90s, and then now people are doing it again.
Yeah. One thing I will say, the one thing I really enjoy is like all these bands like kind of going back on the road again or putting out new stuff, like you know, like just bands you might not have had a chance to see in their heyday, or you just never saw, like you found out about them after they broke up because they meant so much to people, and it's like, oh man, this music's great, I wish I could have seen them live. And now it's, everything's opening up again. It's like you can see everyone.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, there was actually this really funny story that you mentioned this, and it plays into the Promise Ring. I love their band Maritime. I think they've written amazing, amazing songs. And I sometimes tell people I like it more than the Promise Ring. And I sometimes get shit for it. And people have, you know, had long debates with me. It's fun. It's what I do. It's I like doing it. But so I saw Maritime in Brooklyn, and there was this little kid there. And I can't remember if it was all ages, so maybe he was 21 or maybe he was 19 or 18. He could have been younger. And I remember him yelling Red and Blue Jeans at the band. And, you know, it's Davey and Dan from Promise Ring and a couple other friends of theirs. And, you know, you see Davey, and Davey's a funny guy. I've interviewed him and gotten to do, you know, meet him along the way a few times, and he is hilarious. He's sarcastic. He just has a great sense of humor. And this kid kept yelling Red and Blue Jeans, and I was getting annoyed because I was like, I'm here for Maritime. Like, I've seen Promise Ring 20 times. Like, yeah. I'm good. But so after the show, Davey made a joke or something about to him and kind of played it off really well. So after the show, I go up to Davey, we're hanging, and I was like, hey, how's it going? Like, what, you know, I wanted to ask him, so what'd you think of, you know, the kid yelling Red and Blue Jeans? And he said, I loved it, because he probably has never seen us, and he came to the show and paid to see Maritime, but he loved Promise Ring, and he's like, they came. And that was I was in that mindset where I thought he was going to start talking shit, but for him to really be happy about that he came, and it was just coming from such a right place. And I hope that kid got to see the Promise Ring reunion shows, because they played a few, not only, I think a year later. And so it really kind of said, like, you're totally right. There's a kid that's going to go to that Sunny Day show for that first time on that How It Feels tour, and they've never heard in Circles live, or they're going to see The Promise Ring for the first time, and they're going to play a song from every record, and I might have heard, you know, Very Emergency songs or Nothing Feels Good songs a million times, but there's someone in there that's hearing it for the first time live, and that's a testament to the songs and the bands that's happening, that someone's getting into it and getting to experience that. It's a beautiful thing.
No, definitely. Yeah, I'm with the American football shows, and
no one saw American football.
Exactly. That's what's even crazier. They were playing like tiny shows in basements, and they didn't even play many of those. And now they're selling out, you know, Webster Hall three nights in a row. It's insane.
Which, for everyone, it fits 1,400 people a night, if anyone's wondering. A kind of cool thing too is I got asked to DJ a couple of the shows.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very, very excited. It hasn't been announced yet. I'm sure they're going to do some official thing closer to, but I'm going to get to spin some records while people wait for the football.
Nice. My friend, she lives in North Carolina as well.
Nice.
And I had sent her a picture when I got my tickets, and she's like, whoa, do you have spares? I was like, I have one. And I've been telling you, if you want, just come up. Just come up for the weekend. Like, that's it.
Yep.
And she's like, you know what? I'm in. Just like, it was like a split second reaction. Like, yep, I'm going to go see American football. It's like, hell yeah.
Yeah. I have some other, I have a joke for some of the reunion shows. I call them babysitter core. Because everybody needs a babysitter when the band comes through. And so when Quicksand was doing a couple shows, they had the New York show at Bowery, and then they played Music Hall Williamsburg. I remember the Friday show was Bowery, and, you know, there was no tickets, sold out in minutes, blah, blah, blah. Friday starts rolling around. You start seeing Facebook posts and Twitter posts and people going like, hey, man, I got one for Friday. Can't go. Can go Saturday. We'll trade. Or totally can't go on Friday. Got screwed. You know, can't do it. You know, got an open ticket. So there was tickets upon tickets. You know, people were like hitting me up the entire day. Like, Tom, you need a ticket? Tom, you need a ticket? No, I'm good. You know, I'm good. I bought it when they came out. But it was a lot of people, and I made fun of everybody, but it was a lot of people had, you know, other responsibilities, i.e. a child. So we're at that point where a lot of people need to ask the wife or ask the husband if they can go out all night and see these bands. So I always joke that there'll always be tickets day of show, because people have lives. And before we had no restrictions. We could do whatever we wanted, but now there's a few other things that we're responsible for.
That is true. Yeah, and I'm just loving it, because I get to catch up on all these bands I never got to see. And it's just like with Braid, never saw them, and now since they're touring with the Leaves, I get to see them four times in a row, because I usually go out and help the Leaves out and like do merch for them.
Oh, cool.
It's like, great, I get to see Braid finally.
Yep. Yeah, that's another band that they've always done it. They've either with Hey Mercedes or with the Braid stuff or Bob's solo thing or Chris Broach's solo other bands. It's just they're such a music band, and they love writing together, and you can tell. Like, they get in a room, they write songs. And isn't that what you want? That's another point that I think should be made. Like, a lot of these bands are like, well, this record's not as good as the other one. Well, guess what? They're still making music, and you should be happy that they're still around, because who knows what they're going to make next. Like, I hope Jimmy Eat World never breaks up.
Yeah.
I hope that band continues to make music for as long as they can, because I want to hear what's next. I think they make amazing stuff together, and, you know, let's hope that Sunny Day's got something left in the tank, and they're in 5 or 10 years they want to do something or whenever. And same thing, you know, it's we should all be happy. We shouldn't be standing up and taking credit or trying to say that it's not good. It's because these bands deserve our respect because of how much they meant to us. And they shouldn't be this. Yes, you can critique it. Yes, you can give it a point total or a grade. But as a fan, you should at least be excited and happy that they're still around and they're still making music, because that's the reason that I'm still around.
Yeah, that kind of falls into the whole Weezer thing, where everyone's like, "I wish you guys just stopped after Pinkerton." And I'm like, "No, keep going, I want to hear everything that's going to happen."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just announced the Rick Ocasek record,
which I'm looking forward to. I mean, I just take in way too much. Music is just so fun. It's like there's always something you're going to enjoy.
Yeah, there's no need to treat it like a special thing where this band only did this. Like, what if we only, you know, when you had to write, you know, something for work, do you only send in things that you did your freshman year of college?
That's true.
No.
Yeah.
You know, you're better at what you do. You've been doing it more. You understand things. You understand the world more. And for you to, when you're outputting that, that's what's coming through, your knowledge and your expertise. And it's the same thing with these newer bands. You know, each record gets better and better. Yes, you can have an off record, or you're not into it, or it sounds really weird, or you wanted to use tambourine in every song, but that's okay. It's fine. You want that time and that experience to come through, and I think it does on a lot of these with these bands. And you're writing.
No, definitely. I mean, well, it's fun. It's crazy because it's like, okay, so, you know, you wish they'd stop here. You wish they'd stop then. Then it's like, okay, so you want this one great album from a band. So say in the case of Jimmy Eat World, you're like, Clarity. But then you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, but you don't get to hear what Bleed American was. Or, you
know. Futures.
Exactly. It's just like there's other things. Like Saves the Day, it's like, oh, Through Being Cool. Yeah, but what about Stay What You Are? What about, you know, Daybreak? What about, you know, everything? It's just
yeah it's Chris Conley from Saves the Day was probably one of my favorite interviews ever. He was in such a great place, and the interviews for the podcast, I mean, and he was in such a great place and so happy with where he was. And yes, he's the only original member yet, you know. Yes, they have a ton of music out there, but I got to see them at their beginning, and I got to see, I mean, I was sent demos of their songs, you know, from the first record. I have demos Through Being Cool. Like, I've been experiencing this band forever, and they're still going. They're still touring. And you know what? He plays all the hits, and he knows it. And he knows that it makes people happy, and he knows that everyone wants to hear those. But the fans are there, and they love hearing the new stuff too. And that's what you want. That's how you build a career. That's why he's still touring. That's why he's on Warped Tour. That's why he's on these tours, and these bands, these newer bands love him, is because he gives what you want. And that's the fan is who's important. They're the ones paying the ticket, going to the turnstile, or going through to get a stamp on their wrist to go into this show. And for a lot of these bands, I think there's some bands that I won't mention, kind of tried to leave this time period in the past and leave what was sort of done and sort of, no, we're a different band now. We're going to do this, and this. And that's not the right way to think about it. You need to make people happy. And there's that guy, that old curmudgeon like me in the back that wants to hear the first record. And there's a kid in front that just got your new record for the first time. And maybe he hears that older song and goes and buys that old record. Or he sees everybody lose their shit. You know, if a kid goes to Saves the Day and he only has Stay What You Are or In Reverie or something, and he hears everyone lose their mind when Shoulder of the Wheel comes on and the encore, he's probably going to wonder, oh, man, maybe I should go check that one out, or I'm going to go listen to that on Spotify. Or it's only a good thing. So, yeah, I agree that the band's doing this, and I think they should have a little bit of leeway, and there shouldn't be this this whole, like, you know, instant sort of, well, it sucks, it's not as good as Clarity, or not as good as Through Being Cool, or not as good as the self-titled record for Sunny Day, whatever. I despise people that do that.
I like it. I don't know why, you know, this is like 20 episodes in, 22 episodes in, and I still say I usually do this. I always do this. This is how I end the episode every single time. I ask the guests to choose a song off their favorite album, that it's either their favorite track or something you just feel would really be catch the ear of someone who's maybe never heard of them, and we always put it on the end of the episode, you know, just as a nice little outro thing.
I would 100% off How It Feels to Be Something On from Sunny Day Real Estate, released in 1998, talk about this last track, Days Were Golden. Days Were Golden was a song when I first heard the record. It didn't hit me. I was like, okay, great. But it was one of those songs that made you want to start the record over. Or when people used to listen to records over and over again when there wasn't as much music out there, that song made you want to listen to the record again. And the song was like that for me. It was like, okay, when it's over, I'm going to, you know, play the record again. And when I saw them live for the first time, and they did that thing that I mentioned earlier where everyone sort of stopped playing as the song ended, and it ended with Will sort of doing the drum beat, it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, and at any show, at any time. And it was done in such a tasteful way, and what a beautiful way to end the set. There was no encore. That was it. And I thought it was a really interesting way, and I remember joking with Dan Horner after the Terminal 5 show when I got to hang out with them, and I bugged him. I said, why didn't you end with Days Were Golden? And, you know, he's like, we love that song. I love that song. But it just wasn't, you know, we kind of agreed not to. We did this other encore thing. But it was great that that was sort of in their mind, too, that they knew that that song on that tour was ended that way. And so for me, you know, Days Were Golden and off that record is a beautiful song. If you can find a video of it done live from that era, it was a pretty beautiful thing.
Nice, nice, cool. Dude, I want to thank you for agreeing to be on the show.
And thank you for your patience with me falling asleep.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I tell you, I've done it before. I've done it before. I'm surprised our paths haven't crossed. We have a lot of mutual friends, I've been noticing, and it's just like...
Oh, interesting. Who?
Just like Jonah Bear, and just like yep. All those guys. Like, every once in a while, I'm like, wait, we're all followed. It's just like, holy crap. So, any closing words, good sir?
No, thank you for doing this. Thanks for letting me talk about you know, my site and everything that I do outside of my normal day-to-day work. this is not my full-time job. And I just, you know, I think it is a beautiful thing that this music has come back. And regardless of the tag, regardless of what people call it, it's good music, and we've all sort of have this affinity for these bands and the connections that they made and still making, like we're finding out tonight of how, you know, connected we are, and we've never met. Yeah. And I think it's a testament to the music, and that's a testament to these bands, and we should be really happy that they're still around and making music. And so this is a good thing.
Right on, right on. Well, Tom, I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in once again. And, we're going to leave you with Days Were Golden by Sunny Day Real Estate off their album How It Feels to Be Something On. As Tom told us, what year was that released, Tom?
That was in 1998.
I like how you went the full thing when you would name the album. You were like, it was released here, you know. I appreciate that. So, yeah, man, thanks again. I'll be dropping by Idle Hands on a Thursday. And, hopefully everyone tunes in again next week. Once again, we're all over the internet, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, all that good stuff. Until next week, have a good one. Goodbye.